All right, welcome everyone to Sunday evening, Sunday afternoon, or Sunday morning, whichever the case is, on People's Internet Radio. I am Stephen Roberts, and I am filling in for Barry Prince and the Big Puzzle. He is out in the bush looking for mushrooms or something like that. He normally in the spring he gets a lot of mushrooms and sells them to whomever can buy them. And I want to thank also Annie over at Shake and Wake Radio. We are streaming over there too. So first, actually, I don't know if we're going to do 2 hours or not, but I know we are, three of us are going to do at least 1 hour. First, I want to introduce Mike Traherne. He's a former guest of Barry's on the Big Puzzle. So welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure to be here. Yeah, it's good to see that, you know, Barry's gone back to work, I guess. And we kind of jumped in to fill in for him today. Well, should I introduce our guest, Steve, or are you going to introduce him, or what are we going to do here?
I'll let you do that also. You are partly the co-host on this show here as a fill-in for Barry, so yes, go ahead.
Okay, here we do. So I want to welcome to the show Ronnie Cameron. Ronnie's out of Ontario in the Toronto area, metropolitan Toronto area. And Ron has had some decisive conversations that have gone on over the time of his live coverage that he has quite a following in Canada. And we're going to talk about a few things here today. So it's going to be a little varied. We're going to go from back and forth. But I just want to welcome to you the show, Ronnie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Mike. Thanks a lot for inviting me on the show. Thanks a lot for having me, Mike. I've been looking forward to this. And it's nice to be able to get a little exposure to more of an international audience. So that's a real treat for me today.
Well, that's great. Hey, Ron, listen, you know, you and I go way back. We've talked about many things over time, and it's as exciting for me to have you on the show today because sometimes I think in people's messages and the way things have been going on in our world, we're so isolated to one line commentary or one paragraph commentary or possibly two or three different broadcasts of the same topic. And sometimes opinions get just showered in so many different ways. And we lose the actual concept of the conversation. And so you, why don't you tell a little bit of the public that are listening today a little bit about yourself and what it is you talk about. And we'll start to talk about a few things that you are with, which I understand. But why don't you just give us an intro to Ronnie Cameron?
Sure. Sounds good, Mike. Basically, my political ideology can be summed up pretty simply, the survival of my people is paramount, and I feel everything else is kind of like a satellite issue. Nonetheless, they're all important to discuss. So basically, in terms of activism and politics here in Canada, I started off as, I guess, more of your basic conservative. I was very concerned about issues like the Islamization of Canada, abortion, the rise of LGBT and transgenderism, specifically how it affects the youth. But as I delved further into things, I realized that things like demographic stability, population replacements, and the overall attack on whiteness is actually perhaps the biggest threat that we're dealing with. So I did kind of go further towards the right. I do have to say, although I believe race matters, I do feel that need to kind of collectivize with my people. I also have to say that just because I emphasize the importance of race, it doesn't mean that I wish to cause harm towards other people. It doesn't mean that I wish any sort of like negativity upon other races or cultures. I simply believe that we all have the right to a homeland. We all have the right to exist in the way that we want to exist. And the West has brought in massive amounts of immigrants from all across the world who do not necessarily come from places that share values, cultural beliefs, or religions that are congruent with our society. So that alone is something that we all should be concerned about. To sum up simply, that's basically what I am most concerned with is the cultural and social issues that we face, specifically demographic transformation and the attack on whites.
Do you get called a fascist a lot?
I get called worse than a fascist. I definitely get called worse than a fascist, that's for sure.
I've seen Ronnie get called worse than a fascist, and he stands up very strong. I want to commend, first off, a person that talks in this realm of conversation at Ronnie's age. You know, being in the realm of his early 30s, and very early, he's a very strong voice as to what's going around him and his future. And it sometimes, works along the lines of the elder groups and the younger groups, that follow him in our next, you know, generations coming up and discussing these things. I think that sometimes when we talk about, culture, we become racist, bigot, whatever you may want to call it. And the liberals may call it, fascism, and they may call it certain things. And we've got a great divide of conservatism and liberalism, and democracies themselves. But when we get into cultures, you know, we've always been of this nature that, you know, someone's always trying to take someone out. And it seems that time after time, it doesn't matter how far back in time, one culture was trying to take another. So we now come to attack, and I agree with what Ronnie says. Western civilization reached out around the world, and we tried to fix many things. We can go back on not just apartheid in Africa, but you know many things. I mean, Canada was a big influence in breaking the Iron Curtain with Russia, per se. I mean, a lot of times, though, again, it's attacks on cultures or governments. We never ever seem to be at rest. And now it seems like the ones that fought the most for everybody around the world, and I truly believe that we really did in Western culture, we tapped our hands into many more things than anybody else in the world got involved in. And it seems to have come back and nipped us in the butt. And so therefore these discussions need to take place. There's been many people speak of, and I'll get off this for a moment because, you know, I'm going to let Ronnie really get going on his speech. But when we looked at the opposition in Australia in his demonstration that he's having a problem in his country because of a certain group of people, he was asked if that was not racist. And his answer to that was, it's not racist when it's a fact. And it doesn't matter if it was white Christians creating the problem, then they would be labeled as the white Christians that are creating this problem. So we seem to be at a big power and struggle of divide between left and right. I've always said that we are extreme right and left. There's no getting back to the center. You know, it's gone too well undivided. But yes, I do believe, as we see around the world, that there's definitely attack on white people and its culture, and it needs to be addressed. So, Ronnie, how about you take it from there?
Yeah, well, Mike, you said a lot of things there that I want to touch upon. And first off, we got to talk about intersectionality. We have to talk about critical race theory, because those two things have basically placed white people at the bottom of the social totem pole, whether we're talking about free speech, job availability, how we're represented in the media, how we're even represented in politics as a whole. There is a giant need coming from the left for increasingly more and more diversity. Hyper-diversity is what I would call it. And we all know this, it means less white people, fewer white people. So we can break down the attack on whiteness in multiple ways. We can look at it from an economic point of view. We can look at it from a social point of view. We can look at it from a media point of view. If we compare, say, what happened in the U.S., the case with the Covington students, the student who was smirking at the native fellow who was beating a drum in his face. Well, we all know what ended up happening with that. However, that received, what, about like 2 weeks of consistent media attention. However, a lot of these attacks coming from Muslims or from the radical left, Antifa just gets swiped under the rug. Here in Canada, there was a father and a son who have been arrested for having explosives, a detonator, chemical weapons. This has received very little media attention. Now, I think this is far more important than a white kid smirking at a native, even if that white kid was guilty of smirking at a native. You know, there's Jesse Smollett's. We can talk about so many things in the media. However, I want to step away from the attack on whiteness just for a second and talk about some issues that concern me as a white person. I think all people have a right and ought to feel concern about the group that they're a part of, be it racial, be it ethnic, be it national. So as a white person, when I look at the stats and I see, you know, whites are suffering from depression at increasingly high rates in America, 80% of suicides are committed by white people, yet we only represent about 65% of the overall population. In terms of addiction to prescription drugs, alcoholism, these are issues that drastically affect the white community. Yet we don't have any advocacy groups. We don't have any community groups. We don't have any government funding directed specifically towards improving white communities. So we are really the forgotten group of people. One last thing before I pass it back to you guys here. Something a lot of people don't talk about is the effects that automation and job outsourcing has had specifically on the white community. The Rust Belt states, a lot of white people have been heavily affected by this, and this has led to economic stress. This has led to emotional stress. Obviously, this is why Donald Trump got elected, because he represented the forgotten people. And specifically, I think those people are white. So not only do I feel that there's an attack coming from the outside, these extrinsic kind of factors, but we also have intrinsic factors that we're dealing with as well, things that are kind of unique to the white identity. And this is not racist. This is no different than a native saying, hey, we have a problem in our native community, whether it's women going missing or getting beaten or alcoholism. And they're not called racist for caring about that or asking for government assistance. But the moment a white person says that, exactly what you said earlier, Mike, they're called a racist, and that is not fair.
I want to add something here, Mike, if I can.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
I caught a video just 2 or 3 days ago. It was of a black man in America here. He had always voted Democratic. He had always voted liberal because whatever the reason was, he did. Whether his society told him to do that or I don't really know. It doesn't really matter, but he conducted an experiment one time a couple of years back. He made a fake profile on all of his social medias, and he went in as a conservative white man, and he started with the rhetoric that most of the right-wing groups have, you know, anti-black, anti-Jew, anti-gay and lesbian, anti-this, anti-that. And he found out from experiencing, like, almost a full year of doing this, that there was an algorithm on all social medias. Do you know what the confirmation bias is, either of you two?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, he found out that there are algorithms that would only support the right wing whenever he would do research on these groups that he had gotten into. And it got him to thinking, because when he was his own profile of himself, the algorithms were only left wing, and he could only see left wing rhetoric. I just, you know, people just don't realize that unless you get the entire picture, you need to see both sides of it.
Well, I think, if this is my turn, I would think that, and I try not to put too much of my emphasis on what I actually think but the bottom line is this, when we talk about, Ronnie, what Ronnie's saying about a forgotten people, someone that's been shunned to the side based on what government agendas dictate, not what actually the people think. And in layman's terms, we don't want to get too complicated, because sometimes the listener gets misconstrued with the wrong direction of where we're trying to go. When we hit any types of these type of factors, and it goes into the abortion argument we're going to have, and it falls into the LGBTQ as part of the discussion that's going to be there as far as Canadians go and what our laws are that dictate to any minority is all the same. You're allowed to have it. You're accepted in our community. We don't battle it, and it looks like sometimes everybody wants to be sort of developed into a box, and they want to be recognized as something now instead. So I think that that happens as well as a black man being a white man and falling into the algorithm, same thing. It's all the whole structure is programmed to make us do that. And you know, we've had those discussions
yes.
on how we work on monotones and things of that nature.
Yes, it's programmed to keep whoever in their own paradigm, not to look outside their box. That's what it's programmed to do.
Well, and which box? Because, you know, my, for those listeners that don't know on other airtimes, I speak about the box. And the box was a very precarious piece of material because, during the times of thinking outside the box, starting somewhere in the late 60s and even up till today that people say you got to think outside the box. There's so much change and we're so far gone. There is no box. That box has completely disappeared. There's no more out of that box.
Sure. You know that and I know that, but Joe Sixpack doesn't.
Some sort of box of disciplinary action amongst us all. All of us are guilty of it. It doesn't matter who. Do I agree that there's an assault on a certain culture again? Yes, I do. I feel. And this time I feel it's the white man, seemingly so. So, I have to stand then in and say, you know what? It's not right to do it to anybody. It's certainly not right to do it to us, seeing as we're the least productive in the world anyway. I mean, like, if anybody's really worried about it and are counting their stems and their roots of their plants, would know that in 150 years at our development, would probably be rare there's a white man even on the planet itself.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Absolutely.
That takes care of itself. So why do you want to speed up the process? Again, what did the white people do when we're subject to criticism based on what a government does? So then it pulls into the political side. Same thing that we might think about anybody, actually. You know, we only hear about how their governments speak and what that message is when we find that it's mostly propaganda. And generally, people don't hate each other in the world. Generally, we don't. But, you know, we would think that they're all terrorists now because they come from somewhere.
Well, that's just it, Mike. You know, Haitians for Haitia, Africans for Africa, China for the Chinese. That's essentially the way a nationalist ought to look at things, right? And we understand that you cannot have a China as we currently know China if you were to swap out all of the Chinese people with Haitians. If you were to swap out all the Norwegians with Somalians, you would no longer have a Norway. People can understand this when it's put quite simply, but when it happens slow motion, when it happens over a long period of time, it's like watching hair grow. People just can't see it. So, I mean, here in Canada, by 2036, 50% of Canadians will either be immigrant or born to immigrant parents. It's a myth that Canada is a country that is just built on immigration. If you look at the first census that Canada ever took, only 15% of the population was actual immigrants. So we've accelerated the process and we're bringing in people from around the world, not coming from Europe. They don't hold with them traditional Western Christian values. So we're seeing the deterioration of the West, and a lot of it is – well, most of it is coming via immigration. So as I said earlier, every country, every people has the right to a land of their own. They have a right to defend their land. So, I mean, here we are, 2019, Canada, America, these are European-built countries. We did have kind of a war, you could say, with the natives, but there's been war for lands throughout millennia. And it is basically up to us if we are going to defend this land or if we're going to allow it to happen to us, basically what happened to the natives, a foreign occupation coming in and changing their country. I do have sympathy for the natives. Christ, I have sympathy for the Vikings for losing to the Christians. However, battles get won, battles get lost. And I think the big difference between, say, for instance, the Vikings and the natives sorry to go off on this tangent, is that the Vikings basically submitted to Christian ideology. They submitted to the fact that they had lost the battle, and they now have two options: forever fight, forever try to maintain their Viking identity, or get with the times. The natives didn't do that. That's how I look at it. So I do kind of have a bit of sympathy that they lost their land, but this is our land now. This is European territory. The cities that have been built, the economies that have been built, the type of political systems that are in place, these are all European structures. So it is up to us if we want to just simply hand over our land to the people of our world, slowly dilute our country, and eventually you will no longer have a Canada, you will no longer have an America, just like you will no longer have a Jamaica or a China if you take out the relative populations that make up that country. Would you guys agree with me on that? Do you guys think America, England, or Ireland can be the same if you're to extract, remove the white people?
Well, that's what this man goes into. I posted it in the People's Internet Radio chat, and I also posted it in the Skype chat here between the three of us. That's what this man goes into. He comes to the realization that it's not about really black and white. It's about right and wrong. And he does speak about this. I don't know if you guys are going to watch it after the show here, about an hour and a half from now, or whether you stay on the second hour or not, Ronnie. But it's very, very interesting that nationalization is the nationalization is logical fallacy for a reason. They want people to, you know, to promote their own country in that, and the agenda is going against that. It has for the last few hundred years. They've been trying to create collectivism, and the people are trying to fight collectivism with nationalism.
Well, I would have to agree on both accounts, actually, on both sides of this whole coin. I'm 100% with both of you. We're in a very, I call it the blend-in society. And the blend-in society, generally, if you're in a country that, you know, stands on nationalism, which lots of countries in this world do, and you come as a nationalist, that form of integration or connection or introduction can only go one good way. And Canada never said to get rid of the cultures, even when the culture said, should we drop the cultures? Canada said no. They did say no to that. And we said, no, we have to make people realize that we took cultures of nationalists that follow suit to what the country has to say, and they agree, and they're not here to harm anybody. And we didn't have those types of things happening. We don't have those wars generally. We have a very solidified group of people that believe in nationalism. When you start to threaten that mix, I think that's when you find it comes together. It's not quite there yet here, but that will happen.
I do want to add something also, Mike. What gets lost in history, because the winners write the history, every single society all over this planet, whether it's round or flat, or I don't really care which one it is, to tell you the truth, but every single society has sent their criminal element to another place to conquer that place, whether it be America or Canada or India,
Middle East, or
Africa, Middle
Turkey,
East, correctly.
Whatever.
They have always sent their criminal element to do the dirty work. Everybody, I wouldn't say everybody, but anybody that does any research will find that each and every society has been conquered by criminals and the elite that fund them. So.
That's an interesting point. I would have to look into that a little further, but it does kind of make sense, whether it's the Romans, Genghis Khan kind of using those single men that don't necessarily have a family, that are kind of like these tribal warriors at heart. And yeah, I think you're probably right. Smart, powerful people have capitalized on that type of disenfranchised young male to do the dirty work for them.
Certainly.
Another example I could think of is with Cuba, Fidel Castro literally sending all the criminals to America. Like, that's basically what Scarface is all about there, right? And America stupidly says, yeah, sure, we'll take your poor, your criminal, your sick, your this, your that. And
well,
I mean, there's just got to be some sort of
that's a bit of a slippery slope, because Castro was a CIA asset in the beginning, and he always was. I don't totally believe that. No, they had the Cuban Missile Crisis and they had the Bay of Pigs debacle, whatever you want to call that. But I think that those were all inside false flags, to tell you the truth.
You could totally be right, but nonetheless, Cuba did still send their scum and their criminals to America.
During those times, though, if I can just point in for 1 second, then I'm going to let you guys go, because that's what I'm here to do. I'd love to join in, but I'll tell you, that's very true. Look, in the back days of Fidel Castro and you know, the Afghanistan crisis you know, the capital, you know, capitalism, you know, under attack in the true sense of what that was then, and the times we were up against, and the end of communism and a different directive and difference in currencies and trade and all sorts of things went on to get us to where we are today. So back in those days, it meant something different than what we speak about today. It's kind of like a musician writes a song and 20 years later, it's still a big hit, but it means something different to even the person that wrote or produced it. So I don't get that isolated and go back that far. I look at the whole time and how we got to where we are. And now there's a new threat. And there's always a threat, and it's always upon the world. It's never anything simple, you know. Humans just don't do things on a small plan. You know, it's a global message, and slowly, it's turned into what it is today, which I don't even know what to call it politically anymore. I don't know if Democrats or Republicans or anything different than each other, too far off anyway. I don't know. I just don't see very much.
Human history alleges that we only have 6,000 years of human history going back to the Sumerians. I think that there may be other historical writings and historical teachings that go back more than 6,000 years, and that is certainly true, because there are African societies that go back 80,000 years. There are Aborigine Australian and New Zealand societies that go back 60,000 to 80,000 years, but the actual written history allegedly only goes back 6,000 years. And I wonder if there was a time before the 6,000 years that tribes and people did get along without so-called government, you know, or so-called leaders. There has to have been a time where people did get along, but I don't know. I just wonder.
I think there was. I think when we lived in smaller communities, not necessarily families, but tribes, similar to like a wolf pack, I think there was this natural understanding that your fellow man was going to help you. He's going to help you catch food. He's going to defend you against predators or whatnot. And because it was a more of a community type living, he also is going to help with the children, raising them into young warriors or hunters or whatever. Where now we live in a society where that guy's competing for the job I'm going for. That guy is cutting me off in the street. You know what I mean? It's a very dog-eat-dog world. And when you're so disconnected from your fellow man, you need a governing body to keep people in line, because we really don't care about each other the way that we would if we were in these small type of tribes. So the best type of environment that I've ever been into that would kind of simulate that type of existence would be on a sports team. If you're ever in the locker room after a game practicing, you feel like these people are your brothers. You're willing to take a hit for them. You're willing to do whatever. Maybe there's other forms of existence in today's society where you can get that, or other activities, sorry. But Yeah, I really do think that living in smaller communities and tribes, we wouldn't need to have the same type of hierarchical structures that we do now in an artificial way. It would be much more natural. Alphas would be able to lead, and the alphas wouldn't be resented or competed with. They would be appreciated because they're leading your tribe to victory. So in a wolf pack or in any animal packs, the alpha only gets challenged if he's not doing his job or if another wolf or another animal has risen up where he can now do a better job. The animals don't just gang up on the alpha and say, you know, screw this guy. We're going to have first selection to the food and first selection. There is this natural way of kind of governing ourselves. But because we are so, disconnected and we're so massive in terms of our population, I think it's too idealistic to expect, you know, populations of a million to not commit crime and not murder each other and form gangs to an even greater extent than what it is now if there wasn't a governing body.
That's all ego. All, every bit of that is the ego.
How so? Could you expand a little further on that?
Yeah. Well, like you said, I can do better than this guy. This guy's not doing it good enough, or woman, or whatever the case happens to be.
Right. Yeah, I think it's good to have a balanced ego, right? Like if, for instance, given the analogy of a wolf pack, if one wolf can do a better job of leading, he should have an opportunity to take that position. And
but
in the animal world, it's usually a fight.
Can I just interrupt from old Mike here just for one second?
Absolutely.
Listen, I need that ego. I want to see that ego because that's what leads me to follow. I want to see that alpha. I want to be able to follow in a direction where I can trust. We've lost trust. We've lost values. We've lost family values. We've lost everything. We've lost it to the whole system. It's all broken. It doesn't matter how you look at it, but no matter how you look at it, we need that strong, what's now people would call arrogance. It's not arrogance. It's called leadership. And it's called someone who cares about what's going on with their countries in a mess of a world. Everyone challenges every single government when every single government, hey man, I'm telling you, I just don't want to be in a room at a G20 summit when serious chats are going on where the media is not around.
Right.
The sitting around the coffee machine or whatever the hell you're doing while, let's say, I don't know, Xi and Trump and Putin are talking in a corner. And they're all standing their ground on what they need and have to do as far as keeping control of this world. This world is upside down. We need leaders. We're tired of the followers. I'm sick of the shipper receiver guy. No disrespect to the job. And I really hate that people would take it that way. And I don't mean it, but all of a sudden they retire or they're not doing it anymore. And they're 60 years old and they've come up with opinion on how they're going to run the country. It's gone from one extreme to another. It's opinion has just overpowered where we need to, again, where I was going with the box. We need to get a box back.
Right. Yeah. And to jump in there with the touching on the ego there, I'm reminded of a situation in sports, again, to use an analogy. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the quarterback Aaron Rodgers, but yes. he was the backup for Brett Favre for years. Brett Favre, the best quarterback in the league. Now, Aaron Rodgers is an amazing quarterback, and he had to sit there and basically, you know, accept the fact that he's a nobody right now. He's just
never
like some bench warmer. And he didn't go against the team. He was a team player. He knew that he's going to get his chance to be the alpha, and he did. And he you know, it's just an amazing story. I love hearing these types of stories.
And he
Steve Young with Joe Montana is the same kind of thing. But here's the thing. If you don't have any ego, now you're just eternally forever a beta or a gamma or something like that, right? I think every man kind of has to have that will in him to rise above, to be more than what he is. But you also have to really respect somebody who's in that position that you seek and not resent them. In our society, I feel like that's all that's happening is we see that guy with the Ferrari. We see that guy with the girl. We see that guy who we feel is, you know, he doesn't deserve that. Why, you know, there's so many more people that are deserving.
Instead
I'm just giving examples.
I can get it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So many
exactly
things
right.
going on. You do, there's no way I can appreciate some random guy downtown who I have no connection to. There's no way I'm thinking like, hey, it's great that guy is doing good.
The thing is,
just a neutral thought. You know, it's like, who cares? He doesn't matter. It's neither good nor bad.
It's not
but
doing anything
the thing is, exactly, we do need leaders. in government.
We have to have the big business people, because most people can't handle the pressure of big business. It all comes into the realm of how much your mind can handle. And how many people even don't want to do that? They just want to go to work in the day. They want to make their money. They want to pay for their house.
They're not being affected. They're not being affected.
100% prosperity for them. Anyways, I'm going to slant it over a little bit here. I wanted to get into a discussion about LGBTQ, where it stands, how you feel about it, where it sits, what the heck is going on is what I have to ask, and why do we have to cause special attention to those who only seem to be seeking the attention themselves? It's not from us on the other side of the straight side of life, being in their faces at all about what their view is on their freedom of expression.
My feeling is, Mike and Ronnie, that politics has always been called the entertainment for the ugly people. And I believe that is true. I think all of it is lip service. I've been studying this for 10 years. I probably would have a master's degree in political science if I were to go into political science. That's how much studying I've done for 10 years on the subject. I think that for the most part, people get into politics because they're really not good enough looking to get into the entertainment system, or they're just not talented enough, but they are ruthless enough to screw over everybody that votes for them. I don't believe in the two-party system anymore. I tell everybody I've clipped my wings. I wasn't born a bird. I don't have a wing anymore, because I am so disillusioned with the system. Everyone that can study the political system will find out that it is lip service. The people that run for office,
everything is
nothing but lip service. It's nothing but lies. I think that the few good people that do get into the political system are run out immediately.
Or they follow suit.
Yeah.
There's only two ways to go there. None of it's right.
Do you mind if I touch on what you're asking me there, Mike?
Yes, please.
With respect to the LGBT and all of that, I think that it's kind of a weird segue there. Like my mind was thinking about the question that you asked me, and then now I know, Steve, you said something that's kind of detached from that. So if you want to finish what you were saying there, or if you were going to lead that back into the LGBT thing, Steve, I'd like to give you an opportunity to do that, because I'm obviously going to take this into a different direction.
Well, this LGBT thing, in my opinion, is
Q. Don't forget the Q, guys. Q. They're gonna beat the heck out of us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I believe it's nothing to do about nothing. It is a fighting point between the Christian and the gays and lesbians. It is a bigger fighting point. I believe it's a hidden agenda also from the pedophiles, the pedophile rings. All of these men that are pedophiles, they are terrifically trying to get pedophilia normalized. They are trying to get it passed as one of these, what do they call, sexual orientations. There's been countless articles written in America and all over the world that the pedophiles want it normalized. They want it legalized.
Because they're all involved in it or go to jail.
Yes, exactly.
That's why.
They're bringing these men out and they're putting them in wigs and getting boob jobs or whatever the case is, and they want to use the woman's bathroom. They want to get in contact with our mothers, our grandmothers, our daughters, and our wives.
Okay, but I think it's important to say that, like, you know, not all gay people are pedophiles.
No, they're not.
Transgender,
exactly.
Or anything like that. Like, exactly, overwhelmingly, the majority of them aren't. So to start it off with...
It's not gay, though. It's not a gay thing. Pedophiles, for the most part, are not gay.
But we're talking about LGBT right now, right?
Yeah. But they're being stereotyped in it. They're being thrown in with this.
But you're kind of doing that, is what I'm saying.
I'm kind of doing that.
Yeah, like literally. But I mean, I know where you're going with that. I know what you're saying. It's just I don't think that's the
like, I pointed it out
to start off going with the LGBT thing. Because if I was a gay person who's on the right, and I heard what you just said, I'd be thinking, like, you know, your first thoughts of LGBT is pedophilia, this and that. And
well, that's
for me. I do understand what you're saying, but there's a more base level, I think, that we kind of should touch upon first before going towards the outskirts of the issue.
Not so, that saying that's not a topic in the discussion. Absolutely.
Yeah, like
what's your specific point on the LGB something?
TQ.
Yeah.
Well, TQ. I mean, to specific point. I mean, it's such a broad issue that I wouldn't have a specific point. I would try to break it down into kind of like different categories, and then branch out from there.
Specific question
at a
on
base
it.
Level. I would say, okay, do we have a problem with somebody being gay or lesbian or bisexual? Me personally, I don't think that being gay, bisexual, or lesbian inhibits you in any sort of way from living a happy life. I do think that there are some negative aspects to it. I wouldn't necessarily want my child to be gay or anything like that. But I think it's important to say that on the right – we're not necessarily opposed to homosexuality. We're opposed to the LGBT agenda and the transgender aspect of it. And then again, the pedophilia, which is kind of like, again, a satellite issue around LGBT. But I just don't want to completely alienate, because I've spoken to so many homosexuals and bisexuals
on
the right. They are nationalists and they say, hey, you know, I appreciate how you kind of break down the difference between the agenda in the community and the individual.
I can speak to one thing. Maybe the two of you being Canadians can associate with this. Dr. Jordan Peterson, Professor Jordan Peterson, his big gripe, what the critics say about Jordan Peterson is he's homophobic. He doesn't want anything to do with gays, lesbians, transgenders, whatever all of the letters are. And that's absolutely not the truth. What he said on YouTube, on film, he's been interviewed quite a few times, is he will absolutely refer to any of these people the way they want to be referred to if somebody asks him to. Don't refer to me as a man. I'm a Z or whatever the happened Z or I don't know what the pronouns are here lately, but he says,
I don't know the rules.
I will absolutely refer to you as you want to be referred, but I will not be forced to by the government to do that.
Can I throw a slight opinion in?
Sure.
Because I know Ronnie's going to go in some areas where I have to agree that this is not an isolated situation on anybody. By stating it, I feel that we put them in a box that then we say, why are you in a box? So, and then the attention arises based on maybe a couple of words that were maybe not broadcasted correctly or whatever the case may be. Here's where I get confused. We spoke about this off air and I wanted to bring it to everyone's attention. The LGBTQ are a gender neutral community. They don't want to recognize man and woman. That's fine. That's fine. And they have every right in the world to believe that. They have every right in the world to believe that. But then they want to come on and say that the first man is going to have a baby when every part of their deliberation doesn't have a man in it. And so I just wonder, is how far do we let it go with their extremities in how they dictate? And it's out of the deepest of respect to please have respect for others as you want to have people respect upon yourselves. And blend in. Again, I always mention it's a new blend in society. And we need to learn to blend.
I hear what you're saying there, Mike. I have a lot to say on this topic. Do you mind if I just kind of go off for a little bit?
Can you go off?
Yeah, I would love to. I think with the transgender issue, it is very much different than just homosexuality or lesbian or bisexual. There is an aspect to it that I think borders along the lines of a psychological condition, a mental illness, if you want to say that. But I do think that there are these people out there, regardless if it's right or wrong. And it is wrong for us, in my opinion, to have laws or policy in place that forbids people for identifying whichever way they want, right? Like, who cares if somebody wants to say, I'm a woman, I'm going to dress this way, blah, 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 blah. I don't have to agree with it. I don't have to say that it's morally right, but there shouldn't be a law in place that forbids them. And to put this into perspective,
that's what I'm saying too.
Or watching TV, right? Somebody consumes too much TV or eats too much. Should there be a law against that? No, but it's still wrong. And I have every right to voice my opinion without, you know, being portrayed as some bad, evil villain for telling somebody that I think they're doing something unhealthy. So if a male chops off his penis, if he starts taking all of these chemicals to literally change his body, I think that's immoral from a naturalist standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, and from a scientific standpoint. However, I don't really want to throw him in jail. I don't want there to be any laws in place because I believe in freedom. So this is a conversation that not too many people, in my opinion, know how to have. They think it's got to be black and white, where if you disagree with something, now there's got to be a law in place. Or if you agree with something, we have to get rid of all the laws. You know, we could talk about the abortion issue maybe later, because that definitely has very aspects to it. But I think really what we care about is, in which ways does the LGBT damage society, be it the individual, be it the children, be it the masses as a whole. So the feminizing of our youth, the feminizing of men, is something I'm deeply opposed to. And I actually don't think it really has anything to do with homosexuality. If we look in the past at, say, the Spartans or the samurai, these groups were bisexual. There's arguments about the Spartan in particular. However, in Greek society, you could look at what all the philosophers wrote about it, and this was highly prevalent in those society. The samurais were some of the fiercest warriors ever. There is nothing feminine about these individuals, yet they were pedophiles and had sex with young boys. It was within samurai culture, and I disagree with this.
And history shows it's that way today too.
So, I mean, that's my biggest problem with the LGBT community, is that, you know, whether it's gay pride parade and the freaky, types of theatrics that go along, they're exposing children to naked people. It's just simply this freaky political message, and it has nothing to do with, you know, celebrating the fact that gays can be comfortable in society and that they're not necessarily, you know, bad people or whatever, right? So we crossed the line where it went from acceptance to this force-fed influence, which is now really, really sinking its teeth into the youth. And that I think that's really what the right is against to, what the right is against or opposed to. When people use the argument that, you know, who cares what people do in their bedroom? Who cares? Yeah, okay, fine. We're not saying that we want the police to go in there and stop two men from having sex. We just want to voice our opinion about how this is affecting society. So I think there really needs to be a conversation about the morality and how it affects things without it necessarily coming down to policy and even a partisan type of debate.
Yeah. I don't know what the
– Well said, Ron.
I don't know what the truth of it is, but there's been a mantra around for a long, long time that says morals are subjective. I really don't think so, but a lot of people do.
I believe morality can be objective and subjective, because it's contingent on what the circumstance is. So I could say that murder is wrong. However, in war, it's a little different. I could say punching is wrong, but in a boxing match, it's different. So those things are contingent. We can't say that ultimately 100% murder is wrong. But what I can say is the raping of an innocent 3-year-old child. In no circumstance ever, ever is that acceptable. And you can't play the Sam Harris or a philosophy game of, well, you know, it's all circumstantial. No, there are some things that are just truly evil.
Sure.
And if any person questions that, if any person says, no, raping a 2-year-old innocent girl or boy, that's just subjectively wrong. No.
Is that what your question was? Is that what your question was trying to get to at the, what my thoughts are, the LGBT?
No. Just the morality aspect of it. Like,
because it's so confusing of a question, right?
Well, yeah, I wasn't even sure what he meant by the question.
He
told me to make some comments, and I wasn't even sure where he wanted me to go.
Yeah.
I do think the agenda is trying to perpetrate pedophilia. I think, they are using the gays and lesbians and transgender people, and they have practically invented 71 or 73 different genders now. But there's only two genders, male and female, but they've pretty much invented 69 or 71 other genders.
Yes. It's something to laugh at, but I mean, I've never really come across somebody in the LGBT community that would ever take it that far. And I mean, like, I know a transgender person, here in the city. Like, I get, it is fun to laugh at and be like, oh, look at how ridiculous the left is, but it is kind of like a fringe part of the left that it doesn't necessarily represent the whole. So I hate strawmanning, anybody. And I think if you talk to the average person on the left, like, they would, normally draw the line at like queer or maybe non-binary or something like that. But getting into like the 50 and 70, it's kind of something that the right does just to make fun of them, in my opinion.
All right. I'm not sure. I'm really not so sure. I think maybe they have invented.
It's a deepened path. I'll tell you. It's something that, you know what, I guess, you know, in our country, freedom of expression is valid. It's something that we go on. It's legal for everyone to do that. And apparently Canadians didn't vote against it. So that's how it is in this country.
Well,
so as far as liberal to those types of things, we don't really see, I don't know about you, Ron, but do we really see an argument here? Like you're just saying, I mean, I talk to people of many different representations, if I can be so polite as to say that, who are wonderful people and very smart, and they just don't.
If you remember a couple of hours
ago. The way you see it that way, but the rest of the way they do.
If you remember a couple of hours ago, guys, I lost my train of thought, so go ahead, Ron.
Something that came to my mind there, you know, we can say certain things that might sound offensive to the average listener or the average person out there. I know I often do. But as I mentioned earlier, there are transgender people that I know. I have a transgender friend, and it's no different than going online and saying obesity is a problem. Meanwhile, you might have an overweight friend. Does that mean that you hate that person and you judge their entire character based off of this one fault? No. And this is how everything's gotten so crazy, because you can disagree with an aspect of a person's being, be it their sexuality, the way they dress, the way they talk. You can have an issue with somebody without judging their entire character. So when the trans community says, you know, how are you judging everything about me based on where I choose to put my dick or where I choose to do it? No, I'm just saying I'm judging that aspect. Just like if a smoker smokes and I think smoking is wrong, I'm going to have that opinion. It doesn't mean that I hate smokers. So this always strikes me as something that, again, doesn't get talked about with the LGBT issue, because, you know, I do have an issue with it. I do think that it's wrong, but I don't necessarily want to prevent anybody from being the way they want to be. Just don't press it on kids.
Right.
Don't slam it down my throat in society. Right. Would you guys say that like 99% of the right would agree with what I just said there?
Probably so. I know where I wanted to go now.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead then.
No, that's okay. I'm sorry. I know where I wanted to go. I told you guys a couple of hours ago. These people that want to be all of these different gender neutral things, they want us to accept it, but they haven't accepted it themselves. It used to be, probably up until 5 years ago or something like that, that if you had always felt you were a woman, but you were born male, they had an operation for that, and they've had an operation for 30 plus years. If you were born female and you've always thought that you should have been a boy, they've had that operation too. So they are asking us to be accepting of that, but they're not even accepting of it themselves.
Right. The fact that there has been these surgeries or these types of things done in the past. I think a lot of the times it was a type of hermaphrodite. I'm not sure if that's the proper term to use or whatever, but essentially if somebody's born with two different forms
there are so very, very few of them people that have ever lived. I think there's probably only like 100 cases that are even living today.
I've heard it's much more frequent. It's like one per like 10,000 or one per 100,000. I could do a quick Google search as we're talking here, but I think that was primarily what was happening in the past in terms of like sex change operations. And then it became a thing where it had nothing to do with a medical condition. They just felt a certain way. And the advancements in medical science allowed them to actually do the whole transformation, where in the 80s and then before they were just called transvestites because there wasn't enough even cosmetic availability for these people to really become a woman. They were just simply a man in woman's clothing. But now with the hormonal supplements or whatever, they can actually achieve that physique where we see men winning beauty competitions. The makeup tutorials that are available now, it really is a different game that we're looking at, where before I think it was mostly transvestites and hermaphrodites that were taking up that type of discussion. Mm-hmm. So the one question I want to know what do you guys think? Like, do you think transgenderism is something natural and just occurs and we shouldn't even shun it from a moral perspective? Or do you think that, yes, it is, there is something morally wrong or objectively wrong with it? Because I do think that there is something morally and objectively wrong with being transgender, but I put it in the same kind of line of thinking as, say, like smoking or obesity. I don't think a person's entire worth should be judged based on that, but that aspect of it isolated, I do disagree with.
There, I need to get into your argument from earlier. I am accepting of gay people, lesbians, gay men. And I don't even know what the traditional definition of transgender is, typically. But I, like you said about maybe 10 minutes ago, I just want the children to be left alone, both boys and girls.
Yes.
I agree with that. We're up on our first hour. Steve, do you have to do anything in between this first and second hour? Are we just moving into it? Because we have lots to talk about here.
We can just take a nature break if you want. I got about seven.
I'm good to do whatever you need to do. I'm ripping and ready to go. We're on radio, man. We don't even need a camera.
Well, I've got about 7 minutes put on the on a couple of tunes, and we can take a little nature break.
Do you mind if I just get one thing? I did a quick Google search, and it's one per 2,000 people that are hermaphrodites. So in your average high school, there's probably a hermaphrodite.
That seems astonishing.
I'm surprised at that number.
I did too. I did the same search. That actually seems astonishing.
Four different sources have that same percentage.
Well, there we get into the algorithms, maybe.
See how they just do that, and they put that right underneath the radar. One in 2,000. Oh, my God. How did we miss that?
All right, guys. We're going to be back in about 7.5 minutes. Okay, and welcome back to The Big Puzzle without Barry Prince tonight, because he is out in the bush somewhere of Canada picking mushrooms and doing all kinds of fun stuff probably. But I'm Stephen Arbitz, and I still have Mike Trehearn and Ronnie Cameron. So welcome, welcome back, guys. We had a little bit of a discussion on off the microphone on the break there. So we're going to continue on with any particular topic, or we go into a different direction?
I think in the second hour, we're not finished where we were. I think we need to bring it over. We haven't got to abortion yet. We got some through some white culture stuff. I think we got through a little bit of LGBTQ and some pretty stringent opinions there. I mean, I think at the end result, I've agreed with everyone's,
my view
answers
on
the topics.
My view is, their biggest gripe, the LGBT community, their biggest gripe is not being accepted and not having any rights. Well, I am accepting of them, and I wish them all the rights that they want to have. It's just, I want them to leave the children alone.
And I agree with that. And I agree with Ronnie's suggestion that, you know, why are we making it an argument so that you have to have an answer from straight people? Why are you putting us in the position? We shouldn't be put in the position. So don't put us in the position, and then you won't have an opposition by trying to create an opposition. And, you know, when most people just don't want to talk about it, they're not against it, and you have freedom of expression in our country. End of story. And, back to the box thing. You know,
I think
they want to.
I think to tell you the truth, the leadership of these communities, whether it's the, black activists or the Indian activists or the gay and lesbian activists, the agenda is to keep the fight going between the Christians and the non-Christians. Albert Pike wrote in his book in the middle of the 19th century, over 160 plus years ago, that they are going to create another war between, you know, whether it's the Christian and the Muslim. They're going to create that war. They are also going to create a society war between the left and the right. And I can see that coming. They are going to do whatever they can to keep the fight going. Because when people start talking to each other, they're not fighting each other. They start talking to each other. They start to work things out. And that's the worst thing that could happen to the control mechanism.
Mm-hmm. I've come up with a new view on Christianity, on God. Ronnie asked me a question one day a long time ago. We were on live, and he asked if God was in a place, or he was, Ron, you might remember. And I was stumped by that question, and it's not very often I'm stumped by a question. I usually have sort of an opinion on something, but I'm going to do this, and this is where I like to put it. There's so much of a divide inside the Christian community that I think where we went wrong is where when we let our kids out in a day and we have some children and we teach them the common core values that we can and give them the strength that they need to carry on and try to teach them to be creative and be about themselves and bring their inner personalities out. So they go off and do that, and they become young adults, or they become adults by the time we start to get older. And sometimes we disagree with where they came from based on our upbringing possibly or something of that nature. So I'm going to say this to the Christian people and to people that are of God, whether that be the Jews or the Catholics or whatever you want it to be. That's where it went wrong, because we started having different stories, and then our own Christian society created a divide. And so can we just stop the divide and just do it for, you know, God, if that's the case? If that's
well, that's what the agenda is.
Well, if that's
fighting,
what it is, then
the divide.
We've got to do it.
Pardon you me. See, the I am quite spiritual, quite religious.
Me too.
But I don't really like the fact that there have been over 1,600 different edits to the original Bible.
Yeah.
1,600
Correct.
Different edits.
Opinions.
Exactly.
Came into
Bible. Exactly.
In a new day and age. Based on it, I don't know if the scripture was translated correctly in the meantime.
Well, that's my opinion. Yeah.
That doesn't mean that there's not a God, though. And it doesn't mean that there is. I'm just saying that, you know, can we just do it? Can we find the right focal point in Christianity to save Christians then and defend it? Because that's what we're supposed to do. And if that's what we're supposed to do, where is that effort? That's my question. Where is that effort happening?
I believe in God. I believe in an objective moral fabric, an objective purpose to the universe. But I have a lot of issues with monotheism as a whole. I don't subscribe to Christianity. We could talk about that. We could discuss religion, spirituality, if you guys want. Or we could move on to something else, because that could take up a long time. So before we open that, or before I open up that can of worms,
well. I believe that each and every religion is very, very glamorous when you look at it on paper. But implemented, it's never been implemented by any structured government or any structured society. It's always been,
someone's opinion of it.
Someone's opinion of it, and it's always been bastardized. Sorry for the bad word, but it's not really
correct. It's made you question it. Religion, heavy topic with me. I don't know if we should go there, but it does venture us into the one topic we were going to get onto, and I think that after that we'll probably be having some religious discussion, probably inside the chat room. I did like some of the chats that I heard that were out there. And yes, I would have to agree. Abortion. Guys, where are we on it? The conservatives in Canada don't want to talk abortion. They don't want to speak about it. Miss, you know, wonderful rate wanted to keep it out of her construction to what the conservatives are offering. How does that affect us? There's some other things that have come across the plate as well that they just refuse to talk about. So abortion being one, what are the terms? What are the times? Canada doesn't have an abortion law, and they seem to be running away from them. Why? And what's your thoughts on abortion in Canada? Ronnie, you can take that one off.
Well, first off, late-term abortion is just absolutely immoral. It's evil. It's murder 100%. I don't see how anybody with an IQ over 100 could possibly question whether it's right or wrong to kill an 8-month-year-old fetus, right? There's just so much going on inside that fetus to indicate to us that, yes, it is conscious, it is aware, it is a living thing. If somebody says that, you know, abortion at the 7-week mark is okay because, in the eyes of the left, it's just a glob of DNA. It's just a cluster of cells, as they put it. I can at least understand that from a logical perspective, because is that cluster of cells conscious? Is it aware? Has God given it a soul, or has the universe given it a soul? I'm not 100% sure. I don't think sperm has a soul yet. It seems to be quite active. It has a goal. It competes with other sperm, yet I don't think it's conscious. So I think consciousness is really the question that we have to address and then work backwards. So if we're positive that the fetus is conscious at 8 months, then we ask the same question about 7, 6, 5. We keep going back. And so I would say anything after the 12-week mark, based off of how the science that I've come across, the fetus is conscious on some level, and therefore it's murder. But I would extend some sort of olive branch, or I would concede some sort of ground if we could come up with a reasonable solution. And I would say anything post 12 weeks should be illegal. And before I give it back to you guys, the reason why I select 12 weeks, first of all, from a scientific point of view, it has a heartbeat. It starts to have different functionings. Fingerprints start forming and things like that later on. I'm not 100% sure where exactly, but there are a lot of things happening at the 10 to 12 week mark where I would say, yes, after that, it is conscious and aware on some sort of level. And then the other reason why is because, let's say if you get raped, right? You know, the left likes to use this claim. Well, it doesn't take you 3 months to go to Shoppers Drug Mart and get a birth test or whatever, right? Pregnancy test, sorry.
After you've missed 2 periods in a row.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like 3 months, you're irresponsible at that point. I've talked to so many women about this. I'm like, if you get raped by a guy and you're pretty sure that he, you know, ejaculated inside you, are you not going to go get that checked out right away? Or are you going to wait 3 months? They're like, no, I'm going to get that checked out right away. So, okay, rape, not an excuse post 12 weeks. Again, missing your period. Maybe 2 months go by, but not 3. And if you're having unprotected sex, not on the pill, you should be checking every month So
opening up your legs.
Yeah, I give no excuse from responsibility level, and the science also seems to be indicating to us that after 12 weeks it is conscious. So would you guys be willing to, I guess, maybe find that middle ground with the left if they were to be willing to say, okay, yes, anything post 12 weeks is illegal, aside from, you know, if there's health complications, like if the mother's life is truly, you know,
in
jeopardy,
that's,
you know, we
that's
all
not the same thing.
That would be my only exception. I am pro-life. I would only take exception for ending another human being, infant, baby, whatever you want to call it. They call it parasite. I call it a baby. I would only be in favor of ending a pregnancy is if it would cost the mother her life. That would
be
the only
exception. What if it was, say, a 17-year-old girl, and she found out she was pregnant 5 weeks in, and she wanted to have an abortion at 6 weeks, and you could look at what the fetus looks like, and it is literally a cluster of cells. Would you say in that circumstance that maybe it's okay? Because I don't know. Like, personally, I still feel like it's wrong, but I'm willing to give the left that little bit.
I do say it's wrong.
Shave it down to 11 or 12 weeks.
I do think it's wrong, and I say it's wrong.
Okay.
The only way I would
and wrong. Myself, can I? Or sorry, Steve. We all make mistakes in life, and we have to live with those mistakes.
Going out and acting like a whore is not a mistake, though.
male
and female
on the male or the female side. I think that's a joint effort. It's kind of how we make the baby. So yeah. There's a responsibility on both sides. It's not just the women. It's on both sides.
And, but specifically, Mike, like at say 4 weeks or 5 weeks, the girl finds out she's pregnant. She thought the guy was wearing a condom. Like, she basically is as responsible as she can be, and she really doesn't want to have the kid.
How old is she? Can I have an age?
She's between 17 and 21, and she's not – you know, she doesn't have like a great job or anything. She's still trying to become the person she's trying to be. I still think she should probably have it. Like, I'm very conflicted with this, but I'm from a political point of view, from a debate perspective, I would be willing to concede 11 weeks if the left would finally be like, yes, at some point it's freaking murder and we'll draw the line here, find some middle ground. Would you be willing to do that?
11 weeks the left or? Won't. The left don't. That's what partial birth abortion is. The baby's head comes out of the womb and they cut a hole in the head and suck out the brains, and then they drag out the baby piece by piece. The left.
No, yeah, late term abortion is shit. Like, anybody from the left who agrees with that. And I even had a family member tell me she doesn't even think a 1-year-old baby is conscious. So how could killing an 8-month-year-old fetus be murder? And I looked at this person like they're the stupidest person in the world.
Dumbest thing I'd ever heard.
A frog is conscious. A rat is conscious. You tell me a baby isn't conscious? Some people on the left are just truly retarded. And there's no point of even having a conversation.
Well, that's
them.
That's
and,
what.
And not to be confused with mentally handicapped.
That's the question I posed to you just a couple hours ago when we first talked. You know, at what magical point in time does it become a baby? First, it's fetal tissue, and or not even fetal tissue. They won't even call that. They'll call it clumps of tissue, and then they'll call it a parasite. And then once the baby is born, you cut the umbilical cord. They call it a baby. So to the left, what magical point in time does it become a baby? I guess after they cut the cord. I don't really know, but there is legislation all over the world, and people can turn in their children to a church or a police station or a orphanage and not be penalized for it.
If you have an animal, and it's about to give birth to kittens or puppies or a colt or something. And you know, you're to the day and the poor little things and they're ready to burst and you know what? Because they have human life inside them, correct?
Yes.
We don't have to cut an umbilical cord, but it's alive.
I've got two interesting stories for you, Mike.
But I'm just saying as a mammal.
Yeah.
And it's a human here we're talking about.
I watch.
Okay.
I've been watching some of the Animal Planet shows, the veterinarian doctors. I don't know if you've seen any of those up there, but there's one. She's up there in Alaska, Dr. Oakley, Yukon vet. And there's another one down here in the state of Florida. I think it's Dr. K, Exotic Animal ER. On two
Search
different occasions,
whatever.
On two different occasions, I've heard both of these women say that they were going to go. They had animals scheduled for both females scheduled for I guess it would be spay for a female.
Yeah.
Neuter for a male, spay for a female. They had both of these animals scheduled for spays, and they found out that both of them were pregnant. And both of these women say, I don't feel morally comfortable on ending these pregnancies. Ending these pregnancies.
Yes. My point exactly.
But, yeah.
But they'll vote in favor of abortion.
Yes, probably so.
To play devil's advocate a little bit here, I do kind of disagree with the notion that it's a baby at the moment of conception. That's just...
Well, that's what the left says, though.
No. I kind of agree with the left just in the first few...
words.
Steps of the process, right? Like, if you look at, you know, just a fertilized egg or even in the first few stages, I don't think somebody could really look me in the eye and say, this thing is conscious and aware. I actually think that there's microbes on our body that are more aware than that cluster of cells. And this is just, you know, it's being very real. It's being very honest. If God exists and souls exist, maybe a soul does get injected or somehow comes about through the creation of that. But I have a really hard time believing, because there's tons of miscarriages that happen. They're not abortions. They're just natural miscarriages. I have a hard time believing that God would punish that cluster of cells and the soul that resides within it to some form of eternal afterlife. There would have to be reincarnation, and therefore Christianity would just fall apart. So either God is giving afterlives to cluster of cells, or he's at least waiting at some point to offer them a soul. I do believe in reincarnation, because I think if any fetus dies, if God exists, he would have to give it another chance at life. What type of a heaven or hell could possibly be there for a fetus? So from both a spiritual and a scientific point of view, I do kind of side with the left that it does take a while for consciousness and a soul to really come about within
they've already proved scientifically that at 12 weeks and before, the infant tries to get away from the aborted the abortion process.
That's why I say
the fetuses do feel pain.
There's no argument after 12 weeks that it's not conscious, but I think there
really is even before too, though,
and scientific argument that pre 12 weeks it may not be a little person yet. It's right about to be, but I do kind of play the devil's advocate there, because I'm not sure when consciousness starts. I'm not sure. And I think as soon as there's some sort of brain activity, that's when it starts. I don't know, though, because microbes don't have brains. And are they conscious? I don't know. It's a very abstract thing to talk about. But I think we should have the conversation, because in terms of abortion, it directly relates.
I think science.
If I was to bring a number to you, you know, and not so much in a number of an actual physical number, but a statement that comes up, and I'm not picking on the city of Chicago. I'd like to bring this up. The other night, on, I forget which, I think it was probably Fox or somebody was on there. in South Chicago, more kids are aborted than born. Where do we draw the line?
I
800 black babies a day. 2,400 in total per day.
I'm just saying that where do we draw the line? What is okay? And what is, again, then, if that's the question, the devil's the advocate side. Again, I have to agree with you, though. Where do we stop? Where we can't anymore? And I have to agree that if there's a circumstance that's happened and it's a bad situation and there's got to be some sort of, empathy towards certain situations, of course. I think that's an of course situation that, you know.
I find it interesting. I find it interesting that the doctor says nothing to the woman or the girl, the patient, when the doctor says zero to the patient. They don't get to see the doctor at all. They see nurses and they see techs and they see counselors and they see this and they see that, but they do not get to see and talk to the doctor at all.
No, no. One thing about the abortion conversation, I really do look at it differently from a personal, moral, spiritual perspective and a political perspective. And I think this will kind of show how good-hearted Christians and conservatives are, because we both kind of fit in the same category. You're deeply opposed to abortion. As you mentioned there, in South Chicago, the high rate of abortion amongst the black community. I'm deeply opposed to abortion too. However, when it comes to simply strategizing politically, abortion is actually really good for the right. As sad and bad as that sounds, just from a pure political perspective, who are the people that are having abortions? The left, pretty much. Who are the people that aren't having abortions? Christians and good-hearted moral people, right? So if we want the bad portion of the population to go down and we want the good portion of the population to rise up, abortion's actually good. Then if you're an identitarian like myself or any form of nationalist, if white people are having the least amount of abortions per capita and blacks are committing 40% of the abortions, 50% in some cases, yet they only represent 13% of the population, again, this is good for demographic stability. So if I were to just be a cold-hearted, politically oriented person like the Democrats and how they basically are a racist political party, that's exactly what they're doing. They're killing the black community as they're simultaneously convincing them that this is good for them. Me, on the other hand, I actually would rather there be a higher white population in comparison to the rest. But because I'm a good person, I care more about the death of an innocent fetus, regardless of what color it is, that I would gladly stand up for the black community and say, hey, stop killing these people's babies. And you guys all stand in that same category too. Even though you're Christians and conservatives, you're actually looking out for liberals. You're looking out for the left because it's only the left and liberals that are having abortions. So it's actually crazy for the left to say to you guys or to say to us, you know, you're evil, you're cold-hearted, you're trying to force your way upon us. Well, if we were cold-hearted and we really didn't care, we'd just say, hey, go kill your offsprings, go kill yourselves, and we'll raise our numbers as you kill yourselves. But because we truly care about humanity, regardless of what color or political association, we oppose abortion.
Steve?
Go ahead there, Mike. I thought maybe you wanted to.
I agree.
Well, I agree. The only thing I can say is, Ronnie, I think I'm not sure what the number is, the percentage of Americans that claim to be Christian. It's pretty high. It's like over 2/3, over 66% of the people in America claim to be Christian. And if that were true, we wouldn't have the government that we have. We wouldn't have the troubles that we have. We wouldn't.
If it was true, there'd be a lot more churches, that's for sure.
Yes. 7 churches per day go out of business each and every day. Just America alone.
I don't know
alone.
Any true Christians. Not one.
I don't know anyone either.
Like, Muslims pray every day. They literally abide by their book. I don't know any Christians who are a true Christian in that sense. Yeah. I think the religion is dying, and 2/3 are just cultural Christians. They celebrate Christmas. They maybe read the Bible to their kids every week or something like that, and they grow out of it.
They don't even – they can't even spell the Bible.
There you go. There you go. But, you know, whether cultural Christian, preservers of European tradition, we kind of all fit into the same kind of category. So I never want to, make Christians be an enemy in any sort of way. And I don't want them to view me as an enemy in any sort of way, because we are pretty much fighting for the same thing. It doesn't matter if we have a different opinion on what God is or whatever. But I do think, you know, from the left's perspective, they have to understand that Christians adopt at a higher rate than any other group of people. So when they tell us, oh, if you care so much about children, why don't you have, you know, why don't you adopt somebody? That's exactly what we're doing.
That's what we're trying to do, yes.
It's only blacks, children that have a hard time getting adopted, because black advocacy groups don't want them being adopted by white families.
Exactly.
Because we can't raise a black children, then they get stuck in the fucking system forever.
Watch the language, please. But
oh, I'm so sorry. I got hyped up there. My apologies.
I know.
Jeez, guys. But yeah, it is very unfortunate. I think a Christian conservative that cares about his white European identity will still be pro-abortion, even though abortion would benefit his political strategy. And that's something a lot of conservatives don't realize, is that strategically abortion is actually good for us. Well, but if you care more about morality and just what's right and wrong, you're going to be opposed to it.
What the left doesn't know and what they don't realize is that a lot of people in America, and probably Canada too, a lot of so-called traditional families, men and women, that are not able to have families, are being thwarted every step of the way from adopting children of any race. They're being thwarted. They're being stopped by the system.
Yeah, there's a lot of rhetoric. There's a lot of things that come out of Hollywood which suggest that the adopted child could be evil, or the adopted children just end up wanting to commit suicide, or they've been raped or abused. And they really always portray this message that adoption is always evil. And that hits the subconscious mind of women. It'd be better off to just spare the child of this horrible life and not even give him one. And it's the worst type of mentality, because I have one friend who was literally born in a bathtub to a drug addicted mom. And now this guy has a great job. He's about to get married. Mike, I think you mentioned earlier how you know people who've been adopted before and have grown up to have amazing lives. So who are we to play God? Who are we to say who gets a chance and who doesn't get a chance based on the cards they're dealt?
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of nice people that can't have children. And I think that the process for people to get babies is actually very difficult. It's not really an easy process when, they're lined up to have babies. They're not puppies. They don't get tired of them and they don't move with them. They're children. They take on that identity. So I think that we've lost a lot of the family value, which is a lot of what you guys are talking about right now, and how we've lost that existence. And it becomes an argument between left and right, which is so far from each other. It's, to me, sometimes looks like it's not attainable to bring back, or it would take generations of the next populace coming up, as we talked about, to make that change. So that would be kids like 14. So to start to make that change again, that we've messed up in societies and allowed things go on, and things going on in the world as far as what we're talking about, Christianity and abortion and political sides of things I think it all falls in sequence that, in the end, everything is the same. It doesn't matter if we talk about a populace of people. It doesn't matter if we talk about, again, abortion and what limits we put on it. It doesn't matter if we talk about white culture. It doesn't matter if we talk about certain things. But certain things we can probably keep on trend with, I would think, is, nationalism. And countries are built on nationalism. Democracies, the biggest democracies in the world, are based on nationalism. Maybe so.
Yeah, at least in their origins.
In their origins, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And those people will always be a nationalist no matter where they go. So again, I don't call that a threat. What I do call that is those people also being under threat from the left side and its agenda on how aggressive it is.
I just want to insert one little factoid here before we move on. I was absolutely correct about one thing that I stated, and I was wrong about another. It is true that black non-Hispanic women have the highest abortion ratio, 440 abortions per 1,000 live births. Absolutely insane numbers. They represent 37% of all abortions, same as whites, yet they only represent 13% of the population.
Yes,
however, I was wrong when I stated that most people having abortions aren't religious, because according to Center for Disease and Control in 2015, 7 out of 10 women obtaining abortions had religious affiliation, 37% Protestant, 28% Catholic.
Yep.
So I was wrong when I said that, the people who are having abortions are predominantly not religious.
Correct.
But I was correct with my first statement.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah. That's correct.
Well, no, you got to call. I like to tell people the facts. Who cares about my feelings about being right or wrong? Yeah, it's the truth that matters the most, right? Yeah, so
always, every time. Good one, Ron. That was a good one. Thanks for letting us know that.
But well, yeah, we can move on there.
It just sounded BS to me, you know? It just sounded like BS. So,
but Steve, don't you see where I'm saying, no? Where, when it's that much of a succession, where do we stop it?
If it's that much what?
Well, if it's that many aborted, when do we start to have discussion on not getting pregnant in the first place?
Hey, thank you. That's been my message for 10 years now.
So I
don't
I
have.
Don't
you know,
we were taught as kids, not to get pregnant. That was a good one.
It's about taking responsibility.
I think they said you get chlamydia
and die. It's about taking responsibility for your actions. So if you don't want to, if you're not for abortion, but you end up getting one anyways, as a woman or a young man and a woman and their choice, sure, it's their choice. But if it goes against your grain, then don't have the illicit sex in to begin with, or have it protected.
Yeah. Be smart. Yeah. And again, even if you do make a mistake, it shouldn't take you 3 months.
3 months, exactly.
To figure it out. Yep. That's irresponsibility, and you don't pass the buck on to the fetus. He shouldn't suffer as a result of your irresponsibility not get it dealt with sooner. That's how I look at it.
Do you guys actually know that the Roe v. Wade case, the woman in that case actually had that child, and he's a 45-year-old man right now?
And she totally disagrees with it. The left never acknowledges that she's not on their side. Like, she,
right.
Yeah.
She figured it out late in the pregnancy and said, no, I'm not doing this. You're using me.
I'm not actually sure if she's still alive, but I remember
I think she might
on
be
record
but
saying that.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Astonishing though.
I remember, when Trey Gowdy was really loud, and he seems to have quietened off a little bit, or maybe we're just not getting it as much as we used to. I'm not sure on that. But he used to speak on how Publix made change, and he spoke of great divides and imbalances.
He's probably too busy buggering some little boy.
He's probably what?
Too busy buggering some little boy. Buggering as in...
I don't know what that means.
Buggering is a English term. Irish. It's...
Sodomy.
Sodomy, yes. Thank you.
I see.
Yeah, it's weird.
Is there talk of that with Trey Gowdy? Really?
They all do that. They're all involved in that. That's the only way they can get into politics.
Funny, it just reminded me there when you said a buggering. It's, people call kids you little bugger.
Yes.
And the origins of that word is a sodomite.
A sodomite,
and then,
yeah.
The other one too, a broad, it just recently came by this one. It's a piece of meat with holes in it. That's where that term originally comes from. So it's funny, all of these terms that are socially accepted, you hear them in TV and all of these things. Yeah,
right.
They have really,
right.
really derogatory meanings.
Sure they do.
Yeah, like I didn't know.
Well, look at the word.
Across men, I don't know many. I don't know, but
look at the F bomb. Not going to spell it out or anything, but everybody knows what the letters are. They actually were an acronym for something back in the 16th century. It was fornicate under command of the king. So that's everybody.
I guess that pretty much sums it up right there. I don't know what to say on any of those topics. I'm staying as far away from that as possible at this moment. But I do have lots to say on it all. But at the end of the day, we do agree on this, that there's a lot of troubles going on that need to be directed in a different way of how we deliver. And I think it's up to people that speak out and do live things, that talk on radio networks and speak live on social media platforms and have these discussions, whether they're frowned upon by some and followed more by many, and to keep the argument strong. We see what's happening in the UK with Tommy and the stronghold he has right now on its existence and how it feels, whether the left or right are on either side of that fence. One thing we do know is that there's a problem with something. So, you know, we have to get to resolution on that. I'm going to say too, I don't believe that every community in the world can live together, and that doesn't come in the sign of a culture, a color, or a religion. I just believe that there's some evil people that should stay away from nice people, and that the nice people should learn how to defend that right. So I hope that we get to that end of resolve before we see the horrific signs of what we see ahead of us in many, you know, segments of what, Steve, we've had on many shows of talking about very many different things, which comes on planet. And we know we talk about volcanoes and many things that are happening around us that sometimes interrupt what we may think is going on, and is so very important, but sometimes how, you know, nature itself takes care of it. And we've seen that in the past and in our lifetimes. So, let's see what happens with it all. I hope that the political agenda for where Canada is going to sit in the alignment of what's going on in the world today and such vast changes are going on.
Well, I can suggest a solution to all political systems. Turn back the clock and make the federal governments of all lands, all countries, make them what they were originally stationed to be. Just figureheads. They have, over time, over 243 years here in America, 243 years, they have been given too much control. The states originally down here were initially set up to have all of the control, and they still should have all of the control today, but they just don't. They've been infiltrated by the system itself and robbed of all of the control. Every single state, all 50 of them in America, have given away control to the federal government. The federal government was never meant to have this much control and power, and it should be turned back.
It's an inevitability, though. It really is. Like, power structures are naturally going to want to solidify
their power. Every single political system has done this. Over history, all 6,000 years.
Families.
All 6,000 years of political history.
Yeah, and it would it. But we should learn the lesson though. Like, you know, if we again going back to the comparison with the Vikings and the Christians. Vikings, pound for pound, were better than the Christians. They were cleaner than the Christians. They enjoyed better lives than the Christians. The reason why they lost is because they were so busy fighting with themselves, and they wanted independence in their own territory. A guy living in Norway didn't want some guy in Sweden telling him what to do. Even people like a village nearby, they were very compartmentalized. Where the Christians were like, no, we have a king. Everybody follows the king who follows God. Everything was structured, and it was a situation where it brought about a weaker type of people, in my opinion, and dirtier cities. I mean, Christians were throwing their shit and piss in the middle of the streets and stuff. Vikings would never do such thing. However, what made the Vikings lose, what made the natives lose, what makes pretty much all these warrior tribes throughout history lose is that they aren't collectivized. Even the Scots with the English, right? The Scots are amazing warriors, but they didn't want to have this huge ruling power. So the story that I've learned is that
nobody does.
You know, you can never have things perfect. We're never going to live in a utopia. And so we have to settle with the lesser of the evils. And unfortunately, that is a type of power, that is a type of government that does oversee everything. But we have to really be selective in which ways the government gets in our business and starts trying to pull levers and make everything equal. I believe in a more type of imperial-based government, a government that is for the people and also for expansion, a government that truly believes its country is the best and its country is going to rise to the best that it can possibly be, competing against the other nations. I think if all nations are working that way, being true to their people, the game will be fair. But if we have this international network of corporate figures, political figures that are calling the shots behind the scenes so that we don't even know if our leaders are loyal to us, other countries don't even know if their leaders are loyal to them. We have ISIS prop up in the Middle East because they're like, fuck it. We don't trust any political figure. We're just going under Islam. Then you have the white nationalists on the West saying, sorry again for the swearing, saying, screw this. We're just going to go a separate way. America, the current system isn't working. So there's always going to be those kind of things happening, and I guess the perfect balance would be to find a government that inserts itself appropriately.
I would like to see a government that just based its qualities on right and wrong, and based on a moralistic view to humanity, which again, as Ronnie would know of me, and Steve, we've talked about this before. I'm a centrist that runs for right. And you know, all of this stuff that's going on is all the same platform, no matter how you look at it. I always talk to people about business when we have those discussions, and we say, look, it's all the same. It doesn't matter. I used to give a loose leaf paper out to people in a frame, and I tricked even the biggest of billionaires with it. And I used to say, where would you start to set a diagram where people would know about business? And they said, well, I'd start to write on the lines. And it was a gift that I sent to people. And I said, well, that's a great analogy, and that's what most people would think. But there's a red line on that page, and it's called a margin. And the left-hand side of the page is business, and the right-hand side does not matter what it is. If you successfully do the left-hand side of the page, everything can be successful. So when we state that and we look around the world at how we see on a global change just in that statement alone, and we take it to the greater size of how we do business with other parts of the world based on, you know, now become such strong ideologies. And the ideologies have put mass separation in people's just general opinions. And it seems that no matter what you say anymore, there's going to be a devil's advocate out there just pounding at it. Even though, you know, on 90% of other things, people agree. We have about 8 minutes left for this hour. And I'd just like to sum up some things. I mean, we spoke today of quite a few things, and I think we got some good vast opinions in large range of age range and seem to agree on very many of the topics. And you know, it was nice to be on the air with you guys. I'm kind of stumped right now because I really heard a good conversation and was able to sit back and listen. And a lot of times I'm doing half the talking, but sometimes when you're listening, a lot of things come to your mind. And I'd like to thank first off Ronnie Cameron for coming on the show for 2 hours today. Appreciated the discussion. And Ronnie, you know, you're always welcome. And we always support your issues and agendas in a rightful way. And I don't think anybody was taken back on what you had to say today, that, you know, it was just based on a form of fact and not bigotry or selection or pre-selection or any culture being any better than anybody else. So thanks for coming on. We appreciate having you. And we hope you come back again for some more discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come back. Thanks for inviting me, Mike. Thank you, Steve. It's been a really interesting discussion. I definitely enjoyed myself.
Yeah, a really good exit there, Steve. I mean, Mike.
Yeah, I just thought that I'd get my last word in because it always goes into the last word.
That's okay.
You know, on the big puzzle and you know, when Barry's on, you know, he always tries to get 3 or 4 minutes where, you know, he has something to say, and we always forget to thank you, Steve. So this time you're on the air, so I thought that it would be pretty classic that you got to finish it off.
I get to thank myself.
you get to kind of, well, we thank you because, you know, you're the one who opens the door for us to be on here, and that's important. And to the listeners out there, you know, we kind of hope you enjoyed today's discussion because it just opened out many views on different levels completely, but it didn't criticize anyone in particular, and so we always yes. appreciate that. That's kind of solution based, and we like to get to that resolution at the end of the day. I know I do.
Well, and, we've had a pretty good discussion in the chat. I know neither of you have signed up for the network, so you're not in the chat, but we started out with about 16 people in chat, and it's currently almost 11 p.m. over there in Ireland and the U.K. It's almost 11 p.m. It's going on 11 p.m., and there's still six people in the chat there, so there has been a lot of banter going back and forth, a lot of, well, as I said, you two are not in chat, so you didn't see all the comments, and I'm just going to leave it there.
I'm interested in checking them out afterwards. I'll sign up for it and give it a gander.
Yeah, we'll sign up and find out. Yeah.
If any of you guys want to subscribe to my YouTube channel, it's Proper Gander TV. I cover a lot of social and cultural issues. Whether it's race realism, Zionism, capitalism versus communism, you name it. Next Friday, I'm going to have Richard Spencer on the program to discuss identitarianism. What does it mean to be white in 2019? So, again, thank you guys very much for having me on. And for anybody out there, if you want to follow my work, if you're interested in what I have to say, Propagander TV on YouTube, Propagander, all one word, and then TV.
Pass me some links, Ronnie, and I can pass them on to the chat.
I will. And as well, I have a website, ronniecameron.com, and I'll provide you with the link to that as well.
All right. Anything for you, Mike?
You know, I used to be able to say go to places, but, you know, I don't get to go to my place anymore. I seem to be with everyone else, and that's been kind of fun. You know, I get to come in on many conversations around. So I guess, you know, I'm here quite often, and I'm on hhgradio.com. So we have a radio show that goes on there, and we try to get out three nights a week, and, you know, we're starting to get that on the roll. You know, basically, I want to say thanks because everybody seems to have me on, and I'm kind of really liking that because I don't get to just speak my opinion. I get involved in a conversation, and I really like that. So I've been fortunate enough to be in that realm now at the end of this whole dictatorship I call the world, and how we look at our global agenda and speak with many people who are adverse and pro, and
well, that's,
and it makes for a great conversation.
I think I still keep saying it over and over again. I think the internet was invented for us, the little guys, the guys that were disenfranchised and don't believe we have a voice. Internet radio has been around for a long, long time. This network here has been around, like, I think at least 9 years. Ben Byrne and some of the other people originally started it over in Ireland and Scotland. Lorraine Gallagher started Scotland is Free. And she got hooked up with Vinnie Byrne and some of his crew, and they started internet radio. First it was TNS radio, and then it was MSI radio, and now it's People's Internet Radio. But, you know, the message is still the same. We are seeking solutions. And that's what people need to do. People need to realize that there is something wrong, find out what the truth is, and then create a solution. So I thank you guys for, well, Mike, I thank you for actually sending me a message or calling me earlier and saying that you wanted to replace Barry today, because both of us knew he wasn't going to be on today, so I thank you for that.
Yeah, I spoke to him there the other night. Everybody, he's safe and fine and working away and doing his thing. And he was pretty excited that we were going to be on for the couple hours talking about what we were talking about. He couldn't wait to hear it. So that's going to be a lot of fun for him. And, of course, you know, I'll be back on, Steve. I'm always on with Barry and talking to some other people as well. And Ronnie, of course, we're always in touch. And thanks, everybody, for the day. I appreciate it. We're going off the air, as I always do. I always tell everybody in our country and abroad and all of our friends, we love you. Everybody still should remain telling each other that they love each other. It's very important that we do that. It's a great exercise. And thanks for having me, Steve.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Until next week. I did want to interrupt that song temporarily to thank Annie for Shake and Wake. We were also on Shake and Wake, guys. So thank you, Annie.